Amen. Amen.
Everyone, welcome again to the February 22nd edition of the In the Now show. This is your host, Slip Mode, and obviously coming again with our famous yet esteemed sidekick,
the Anti-Flunky VR.
The Anti-Flunky VR. Pierre, thanks again for being on the show.
My pleasure, sir.
You're on every show, and and we have lots of people that come on the show here and then, and but VR is always there.
I'm a staple. I'm like bread.
All right. Well,
and Slip's just the honey. Wait, no, that's too relational there.
I'd like to be the honey, though. okay. Well, lots of good information for this show, and we're going to see what we can make out of this show. RFA, Radio Freak America, just had their last episode, episode 99. Very good show. I had a small bit on that. Lots of people from the show that they have had over the year, or still about 2 years now, maybe, because it's one per week and there's 99 episodes. Lots of people were on the show, so check that out. Download that on oldschoolfreak.com. School spelled SKOOL. So, doing it old school spelling there. All right, well, lots of heated information and debates and things coming at you. Well, we kind of hinted at this before in one of our previous shows, and I'm sure it's something we're going to talk about again in the future. But we all remember a few months back when the Chinese government sent a man to orbit Earth.
Yeah.
Well, we had a show where we talked about this, and obviously spawned a lot of information and thought process about... There's going to be other people than Americans out there, and the now defunct Russia.
Yeah.
So, what is it, Russia or the Germans? It's Russia. It's a Russian.
We were in the space race against the Russians.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously that we're thinking that they don't have enough money to really compete. You know, I guess that we didn't feel so worried about it. But now we've got China up there, and they're a pretty big power. And even Europe, we announced on one of the previous shows, had some interest in making a flight beyond our atmosphere. So, what do you think is going to spawn next? Really cool spacecraft, or lots of weapons for control of the space?
Can I get answer 2 for 2,000, please?
Okay, you are correct. And what is the Pentagon prepares for war in space? That's right. An Air Force report is giving what an analyst called the most detailed picture since the end of the Cold War of the Pentagon's efforts to turn outer space into a battlefield.
For years.
Of course, I guess there is some understanding for that, but it really sucks. I'd rather see some better things happen.
Yeah, like better better spacecraft, safer things. Commercial space travel. Hey, there's so much. There's better.
Yeah, why don't people like Bill Gates, start up their own commercial space travel? They got enough money and get some of us folks out there to see the space before we end up leaving this planet via natural means.
Well, see, what's really funny is a while back, I forget the guy's name, but he was, like a billionaire, and he wanted to go into space. And so he contacted NASA and said, hey, I want to go into space, and I'll pay for it. And they went, no, too many issues, blah, blah, blah. So he contacted the Russians.
Yeah.
And he went, hey, I'll pay for it. And
they're like, great, we need the cash.
Yeah. And so then they go, you break it, you bought it. And he's like, that's cool. And so they sent him up there, and he spent some time on the Russian on Mir. But it was really kind of interesting, because here's this communist country who's being a better capitalist than us, the capitalist country.
Yeah.
And so now we're also afraid of the communist China, having free range in space and maybe getting some extra bucks from our multi-billionaires who want to go up into space.
Yeah.
And we want to quell that. And if you're up in space, we're going to shoot you.
Yeah, they're like, look, we don't want to do that industry just yet. Actually, we don't even care about it at all. But if you're going to do it, I don't know, you're going to have a tough time getting past our Star Wars technology.
Yeah, because they're just trying to corner the market, and then they're going to sit on it for another 150 years.
For years, the American military has spoken in hints and whispers, if at all, about its plans to develop weapons in space, but the U.S. Air Force Transformation Flight Plan changes all that. Released in November, the report makes U.S. dominance of the heavens a top Pentagon priority in the new century, and returns through dozens of research programs designed to ensure that America can never be challenged in orbit, from anti-satellite lasers to weapons which would provide the capability to strike ground targets anywhere in the world from space. Sounds like Reagan's Star Wars technology there.
Well, it's a little bit beyond.
Oh, yeah, much beyond that.
Yeah, that it's actually like a world domination system, really, instead of a space protection system.
Yeah. Now, I can understand that, obviously, that if someone else is going to be going out there, we don't want them to stick their weapons up there first, right?
Right.
Right.
Right. But if they're just starting of getting a space program going,
I think we want to be about 30 years ahead of them, though.
Well, we already are 30 years ahead of them.
I think we're maybe 10 years ahead, actually.
We had our first space flight about 40 years ago.
Well, we haven't done anything
30 years
since.
Ago.
Yeah,
so, okay.
Maybe 10 years
well,
ahead.
Well, actually, we put stuff on Mars, so we've gone to other planets, just not manned yet.
You know what? VR, if you could just spout off some information while I search for this article.
About what, sir?
Anything.
Oh, okay, then I'll just continue on my... Oh, if I lost that whole train of thought.
All right.
It was derailed. It was messy.
Oh, here it is.
A lot of brain cells were killed in that accident.
Check this. Got the info. All right. Pulled out of my info drawer. If there's anything I don't know, I pulled it out of my info drawer. It's right there always for me. Okay, this is something interesting that the Soviet Union did back in 1970. Something that we didn't even do. We didn't even have a man in space yet. Well, on the moon yet. Well, no, they did back... Okay, well, this is right after they were on the moon.
Okay.
Anyways, in November 17, 1970, the Soviet Luna 17 spacecraft landed the first roving remote-controlled robot on the moon.
Okay, so they were the first to the... Well...
The remoting kind of thing, and let's see here, looking through this information, weighed just about 2,000 pounds. and designed to operate for 90 days while guided in real time by a five-person team at the Deep Space Center near Moscow. Let's see. There goes the CD. Yeah, they did that. And there's another launching called the Lunokhod 1. Actually toured the Lunar Mare Imbrium, which is the Sea of Rains, for 11 months in one of the greatest successes in the Soviet lunar exploration program. Toured the Lunar Mare, not Mars, but Mare, Mare Imbrium. Their operation ceased in 1971, 14 years after the first launch of Sputnik. So there, I mean, they were, you know, they were doing a lot of things, and we keeled off, and they went broke. And you know,
well, we were like, we don't need any robotic remote thing. We'll just send a guy up there.
We got IBM down here. We got stuff moving down here. So I think there's been a lot of experiments, and obviously I think a lot of it was paid by corporations and stuff like that, because, you know, ball bearings, you know, trying to build something in a weightless environment for perfect bearings, and, you know, all sorts of different things that they have, and things that we don't even know about, things that aren't even out there yet. China's moving really fast, so I think that we definitely have a competitor. They said by next year they're going to have three. They're called Technonauts. Two or three of them that they're going to shoot out there and go around, I think. I don't know if they're going to land on the moon yet, but I think they said they're going to land on the moon within 10 years.
Well, see, what's kind of interesting is just thinking about, because I read this nifty little thing, that if everybody in China were to line up and walk past you at a normal rate and normal walking speed, and given the birth and death rates and all that, and the line would never end walking past you. It would just keep on going because of all the breeding rates, the growth rates. So they need to go to space, because eventually they're going to run out of room.
Yeah. And plus, they got a lot of people that like to travel. They come over here, they take pictures, you know, why not shoot them into space, give them a really expensive Sony camera. And,
yeah, do some astrological surveys.
I think it's freaking great.
That's better than Disneyland for me, at least.
If I can jump on that train, let me, I'd like to do it.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that we should just let them in, like, you know, here, you do the major capital expense.
We'll make sure we can shoot you down. And, go right ahead.
Well, we let them colonize the universe. And then we just use their infrastructure that they created.
Right now, we're inventing a virus that takes out only Asian people. No, that's very bad.
Naturally, by, having the stance that, tag along.
Yeah. Well, I think Bush's big
Except
push.
Except that everything will be too short.
Hey, that's why here's a joke. Here's a bad joke. This is why they say that they make such good digital circuits, is because their eyes are closer to the circuitry.
Yeah.
On the table.
All
right. Bad jokes.
Bad jokes.
Okay. Well, anyways. Hey. Talking about silicon here. All right. Well, researchers at the University of Calgary have found that nerve cells grow on a microchip and can learn to memorize information, and it can be communicated to the brain.
See, that is... There's the, like, really the first... stereotypical cyborg right there. It's just kind of the reverse.
We discovered that when we used the chip to stimulate the neurons, their synaptic strength was enhanced. The nerve cells also exhibited memory traces that were successfully read by the chip, and it's a landmark study published in February's edition of the Physical Review Letters, an international journal.
That's in Canada, right?
Yeah, Calgary. The team cultured nerve cells from a snail and placed them on a specifically designed silicon chip. Using a microcapacitor on the chip, scientists stimulated one nerve cell to communicate with a second cell, which transmitted that signal to multiple cells within the network. A transistor located on the chip then recorded that conversation between cells.
And that's the fastest that snail's neuron ever thought.
Yeah. Yeah. Did anyone ask him what he thought about his neurons being used in this situation? Let's see. We've made a giant leap in answering several fundamental questions of biology and neuroelectronics that will pave the way for us to harness the power of nanotechnology. Can anyone say Terminators? And that'd be interesting if they actually named them the T-1000 and all that goodness.
That could be a little scary.
Nanotechnology, come into a neighborhood near you. 1-800-NANOPHONE. Interesting. We read those articles a lot whenever we get those things on here. Because guess what? It's going to be the new in the now. It's actually right now, it's in the beyond. And someday it will be in the now.
Yeah.
And, we could do a whole show dedicated to stuff in the beyond. Have an in the beyond show.
Ooh.
And an in the now show. That. And actually, if we really wanted to, we could have it I don't want to say past. Something that said it in the past, but something better than past.
Like, yeah, we'll have to think about that one.
The something has gone by. The what has gone by show or something like that.
The what it was.
Yeah. Yeah, the what it was show. Or okay, all right. Well, yeah. We'll figure it out and probably not do the show because we don't have time. but I would love to do it. okay.
See, I wouldn't mind, you know, like having being able to see like infrared. That'd be kind of nifty.
You can. With the device.
Yeah. But like just naturally be like, you know what, I want to go to infrared mode and like
the Predator?
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be kind of nifty.
But I think that guy saw he used infrared to enhance his vision.
Yeah. Well, at the same, you know, that would probably be the best because it could be even more meaningful. Because then you could be like seeing this glowing glob and go, what is that? Should I touch it? And then it.
That movie was weird because if you saw later on in the end of the movie their ship, it looked like biological.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But yet they have all these like little devices strapped to them. If they can make this biological floating ship, I mean, that doesn't mean every part of it was biological. I don't know. It was really weird. I didn't look like a cool character, but I don't know. If I could see an alien, I don't think it really would look like that. I don't know. A lot of the alien movies, like Fire in the Sky or whatever, always integrate a lot of biological stuff, you know, doing work for them while they have these technical things happening at the same time. I mean, I guess that's what we're doing now. We have these tech things, now we're trying to make it biological. All right, maybe I just screwed my point.
Well, I think it's a good point. It's a very good observation.
Yeah.
But because that stuff's so, to get it to be, like, practical every day, it's got to be really advanced.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So that's kind of what gives it a little bit more, makes it more realistic for them being really advanced. If they were just highly technical, well, we're highly technical.
Yeah.
But here you get, like, an integration and synthesis between, you know, machine and an organism. Well, you've got to pretty much have a complete mastery of both.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's very true. There's always a balance. What is it? I guess I'll just plug this. I didn't know this. I saw this movie when I was a child, and then I saw it later because somebody had reminded me what it was. I was like, wow. Fire in the Sky, because we're here in Arizona, and Hackers in the Desert. And so Fire in the Sky actually is a UFO movie that's supposed to be real that actually happened up on the Mogollon Rim, which is up north of Payson. So that was a really interesting movie. Okay, well, moving along, because we only covered one of our stories out of our many, many amounts of information here. Well, it's just something interesting I noticed on IRC. It's kind of a statement to a story here. It said, the topic in IRC was, if you have any of your bots on FUNET, the FBI has owned you. So here's a little bit of information from FUNET. Dear customers of FUNET /CIT, we regret to inform you that on Saturday, February 14, 2004, at approximately 8:35 a.m. Central Standard Time, FUNET CIT's data center in Columbus, Ohio, temporarily ceased operations. Here are the facts of what occurred. The FBI executed a search warrant regarding the IRC network that we host. According to the FBI search warrant, someone hosted on our network hacked and attacked someone else's. After several hours of attempting to track down, inspect, and audit the terabytes of data that we host, it was determined by the FBI that it was more efficient to remove the equipment from our site and transfer it to the FBI local laboratories for inspection. Of course, they've got better monitors. this was completed at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time same day. The FBI has informed us that as soon as the data has been safely copied and inspected, the equipment will be promptly returned. At this point, the FBI has not indicated when they will be completing their when they will be completed with their inspection. Yeah, if you need access to the data, please contact Robert White. Email access email address is rwhite@fbi.gov. If you need to access your data. I don't know. Maybe that's when they're posting stuff on there. Anyways.
Or if you were doing anything wrong.
Yeah, go ahead and send them an email.
Yeah, please.
And get busted. All right. Hey, you have my bots on your net. I need them back.
I hope you're done.
Excuse me. Okay, so, yeah. Well, your bots have been taken down. And
your bots belong to us.
All your bots are belong to the FBI. Well, at least on FUNET. Okay. Well, we talked about My Doom, I believe, on the last show. A new version of My Doom Worm appears to be circulating on the internet and may be responsible for some disruptions to Microsoft Corp's website Sunday and Monday, Sunday night and Monday morning, which is around February 10th, I believe. When it's executed, the new variant called My Doom C or Doom Juice begins scanning for machines listing on TCP port 3127, which is from the infection of the old My Doom. When it finds available PCs, it copies itself onto the new machine's Windows directory, under which the file is named intranet, intra with intranet, intranet, actually. And also creates a file named sync, yada, 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 in several locations. Okay, basically it takes advantage of the backdoor from the first My Doom, and they don't know exactly from this article what it does, and I haven't heard anything following up. My Doom C has the potential of spreading to 500,000 or more computers easily in the first week, hijacking My Doom A infected computers. My Doom C does have the ability to launch denial of service attack against Microsoft's main website, which experienced some severe performance problems. Let's see, it starts. If the worm is started between February 8th and February 12th, it starts a thread that slaps that sleeps for a random amount of time and then spawns 80 threads that begin requesting pages from Microsoft.com at once. My Doom C does not try to attack the SCO's website like previous versions have. And along those lines, let's see, the two opportunistic programs dubbed Doom Juice and Dead Hat threatened only those still infected with a version of the My Doom virus, and didn't pose a major problem to businesses which had previously cleaned systems infected with the virus, the company said. There's about 50,000 to 75,000 machines left out there infected. Doom Juice, whose spread has been moderate, attempts to direct any reinfected... this is basically just reiterating it. But it's saying... this is the follow-up article, that's why I saved it, because it's just not as bad because people are out there getting rid of the virus. Okay. Well, I just did a story on information anonymity and confidentiality, anonymity, and information. Just talking about some of the different laws and ways that certain countries handle privacy and information, if it handles it even at all. And this was interesting because this article came out 2 days after I turned in my story, which I was like, crap. It actually talks about the Canadian Privacy Act, which is really good, from what I read. I didn't read the entire thing. I did read how the European Union and member countries use the European Union's Privacy Act, which is actually a really, really good one, something that we don't have anything here in the States. We do have some sort of privacy things. That's another story. You know, actually, maybe I could, when I get done, maybe I'll modify that paper and add this information, and then maybe post that somewhere. Okay, the way it works is that the Personal Information Protection and Electronic Documents Act protects almost every bit of personal information not publicly available. For example, your name, race, date of birth, income, etc. are protected as where your address and telephone number are not, because these things are generally found in the phone book. Some of the more interesting parts of the FAQ include such wonderful things as businesses must supply you with a product. Must supply you with a product or a service, even if you refuse consent for the collection, use, or disclosure of your personal information, unless the information is essential to the transaction. So, I mean, really what that, it could have been worded better, really what it means is that, and this is something that's in the European act that they have for privacy, that businesses can only carry information on you that is totally essential to that particular product, service, or business. It cannot contain anything outside of that. It can't ask for anything, track it, sell it, whatever. So, and actually, in the European one, because I didn't read the entire Canadian one, in the European one, every company that gets a hold of your information is supposed to actually tell you what information, what the company is, what the company does, what information they have on you, and what they intend to do with it.
Oh, wow. And you That's really nice.
And you get to approve or disapprove. Now, I don't know if that works that way for the government of the European Union and its countries or states, but that way I know works for businesses.
Well, that's still really nice.
Yeah, yeah, it's really nice.
Then you're just getting like random government calls.
Yeah, yeah, we need our money. Let's see. Okay, well, this is something new. Let's give some background here. Obviously, there's a lot of people out there trading information out there in the digital age. Some things are a lot of sketchy, you know, if it's illegal or not. Some people say they just don't know because it's just become so popular. We talked about a 15-year-old that was downloading lots of music, and they, RIAA, hit her parents with a few thousand dollars worth of fines, charges, or whatever.
And then she did a Pepsi commercial.
Did she?
Yeah, she did.
She did a Pepsi commercial?
She did a Pepsi commercial and actually, like, proclaimed it that, hi, I'm one of those people that were prosecuted for downloading free music on the internet. Now, I'm still doing it, thanks to Pepsi and their free download music program or whatever it was.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I'm surprised Pepsi didn't get slapped. But hey, why not? That's a good...
They were the ones who put it on. It was their commercial.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously. Wow, that's amazing. Wow.
Because they're actually paying for this download program. It's not... they're paying for, like, iTunes or whatever it is. I forget what program.
Wow, that's a really risque commercial for Pepsi.
I thought it was pretty cool.
Wow. Just, she better not drink Coke or she's screwed. Pepsi's going to, like, drop her.
Oh, yeah, that's...
Say, you have to drink Pepsi for the rest of your life. Otherwise, we're not going to pay for these fines. We're going to backcharge you. With interest. With Pepsi interest. Okay. Well, FBI is kind of doing something here interesting. Basically, the FBI says it will give the movie, music, and software industries a digital anti-piracy seal, an analog to the FBI's warning display at the beginning of videotapes. How the seal would be used and when it will begin to appear remains undetermined, but it could be embedded on the software of discs or printed on packaging, or could be deployed as a pop-up screen during software installation. The seal, marked by the FBI anti-piracy warning label, is accompanied by a statement that criminal copyright infringement is punishable for up to 5 years in prison and a fine of $250,000. Basically, they say consumers need to be aware of these consequences. And says Brad Buckles, Executive VP and Director of Anti-Piracy for the RIAA. Copyright infringement is theft, and it is not a victimless crime. I do happen to believe that the artists aren't hurting, and I do believe that actually the movie industry is actually, for the most part, screwing over the artists, so I feel there's a little bit of hypocrisy there. But, Buckle said that he believes consumers who see the FBI logo will learn that they can and can't, what they can and can't do with music they buy online or in retail stores. So
there's still going to be a few people who don't care, put it on the internet, and then when you come across it on the internet, you don't get the seal, and then you can say, well, it doesn't have the FBI seal of anti-piracy. It must be okay to download.
Well, yeah. Well, see, okay, you just posed a flaw. And obviously, I don't think that what they're doing here, they know is going to be... I think they're just trying to educate people. You know what I mean? And I don't think it's a bad thing. But yeah, there's going to be plenty of places where that seal is not going to pop up.
Well, I really think that, you know, it's trying to limit it. It's trying to, you know, put penalties on it. Yeah,
well, it's definitely going to help for prosecution.
Oh,
that's
yeah,
for sure.
Definitely.
Yeah,
that's backwards. You know, let's just make it easier for people to get what they want and for the artists to get what they need or the reward that they should get.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I mean, for sure, I know that I think one of the major reasons it's there is so people can't say, well, I didn't know. You know, and even though you don't know, you can still be prosecuted because it's up to you. It's your civil duty to know what the laws are.
Yeah.
So break out the library of books, you know, learn them in three years when you have time.
Except there's like, 1,500 people that all they do all year long is make up laws and get them passed at the state and the federal level, which are our elected representatives. So that's more people than you have time nor energy to know. What, you know, creating all these laws, how are you going to know them all?
Yeah. But, okay. Honestly, though, seal's not a bad thing. What do you think? Not a bad thing?
Not a bad thing. I just think it's backwards. It's, you know, retroactive kind of, you know, kind of, oh, we left our back door open, let's plug it.
Yeah.
Let's do some forward thinking and do some innovative, you know, stuff. And if anybody wants to actually back it, you know, I've got a couple ideas.
You know,
I just need capital.
Yeah. You know, in all honesty, you know, it's a new thing. It's not so new, but it's changing. The whole idea of digital commerce or digital trading, people are still making money.
Oh, yeah.
You know, people are enjoying other people's music.
Yeah.
It's a great thing.
No, actually, it really should actually help the music industry because...
It has.
Because, you know, you don't want to buy a $20 CD to see... just to hear what it sounds like. To see if you might like it. When you can download a song or two and you go, wow, that was cool. That wasn't. No, I'm going to buy that one. Or I'm not going to buy that one.
Well, it's also, I think, pressuring the artists.
To make better music.
Yeah. Because it's just like this. I may download one of your songs. Cool, you did one good hit. Or maybe you did two, or maybe you did three. Or if you did five, I'll get five. You know? But if it's just one, I'm going to take that one. And then I'm going to take, you know, because people nowadays mix all this music together. A lot of people aren't looking to just getting one CD. They're like, that's a cool song. Grab it, want it, keep it. Maybe I'll mix it with a CD of all these other songs. Maybe I'll just have an MP3 playlist, and I'll have all these different songs. You know, or whatever it is. But... obviously, the way to get money from that is to tap into the resources of how these people are getting it. Now, people have done a lot of that. And, yeah, if you make good music, you're going to make more money. Simple as that.
That's right.
And people out there enjoying the music. And isn't that what it's all about? Why do we have music?
Oh,
it's not for making money, right?
No, it's about human expression. It's based in the human existence.
Yeah.
You know, creativity is, you know, inseparable from the human animal.
Yeah. So there's a lot of stuff going on.
Well, like the people of Bali, let me get this in there. They actually have two different words for kind of art. There's the art that you do as an expression of yourself, and then there's a term for the stuff that you sell to tourists.
Yeah.
Really kind of neat.
Here it's white people making Indian jewelry. Sometimes there's an Indian that makes it, though.
Well, they buy the kits.
Oh.
There's been so many times where I've stopped at rest stops and, you know, there's this really majestic and kind of stoic Indian lady sitting behind her her rug, and it's covered with all this ornate jewelry. And I was like, wow, did you make that all yourself? And she's like, yes, it's a great kit. And that's how I learned that most Indian jewelry that I've seen actually is kits.
Wow.
I was just floored and kind of horrified by it, and so I bought a necklace from her.
Wow. So to get back to what we're saying, though, you got to have an open mind, I think, with all this. I guess it depends on really where you're sitting at on how it affects you. But all in all, people are making lots of money. People are listening to lots of music. Not a bad combination.
Exactly.
All right.
Just need to create a win-win situation and not a win-punishment system.
Yeah. Like, yeah, good point.
That's a bumper sticker right there.
Yeah. That requires a little bit of reading before you.
I've seen some mighty wordy bumper stickers.
Yeah. I should make like a bumper sticker with a big old acronym like TSHKLPOYOTNGH43.
Oh, yeah. I got it.
Yeah. Actually, okay. Well, we're going off, but okay. Well, let's get back to this. I'm not going to go off anymore. Okay. All right. Well, Nokia has admitted that some of its Bluetooth-enabled mobile phones are vulnerable to blue snarfing, which there's war driving, you know, there's packet capture and sniffing and stuff like that. And well, now there's blue snarfing, which is the
snarf,
which is kind of like snorting, which is snort is an intrusion detection program, but it's you're snarfing the Bluetooth data out of the air.
That was also a character on Thundercats.
Wow, blue snarf. Okay, well, basically...
it's kind of nifty because it's about tooth. Coincidence? I think not.
The company admitted that a blue snarf attack may happen in public places if a device is in a visible mode and the Bluetooth functionality is switched on. The phone's vulnerable to snarf attack, which include the Nokia 6310, 6310i, 8910, and 8910 iPhones, as well as devices from another manufacturer. According to Nokia, if an attacker has physical access to the 7650, the blue snarfing attack would not only be possible, but it would also allow the attacker's Bluetooth device to read the data from the attack device and send SMS messages and browse the web via that device. More specifically, vulnerabilities are as that Nokia has admitted that its 6310i handset is vulnerable to a denial of service attack. When it receives a corrupted Bluetooth message, a DOS attack would happen if a malicious party sends a malformed Bluetooth message to reboot a victim's Nokia phone. We have repeated the attacks and found that there are some corrupted Bluetooth messages that would crash a Nokia 6310i phone. And let's see, Nokia will not be releasing a fix for the devices in the near future because it has said that the attacks are limited to only a few models, which have been sold to thousands and tens of thousands of people.
It doesn't matter.
And it does not expect them to happen at large. Now, I do believe that. I don't believe people are going to be really going around doing that.
Well, yeah, because that would probably be... It's probably rather work-intensive for the possibility of getting on somebody's phone for a couple minutes.
Yeah, and what are you going to do? Try to, like, you know, blue snarf all the hot chicks off his number, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That might not be too bad. Find a male gigolo.
Yeah.
Blue snarf his phone... And then call all those chicks with his name and say, or just say, just do some social engineering. Say, look, I work with Jock and he's out of town now, and I'll be handling all of your needs. But I'm sure that the software release, anyways. Well, they do software updates over the phones, but that might they might not
but
really
now,
care
like,
to.
Would that really now is that like really illegal? Because it's just open, it's available, it's.
Well, you are not given express permission to be able to view that person's information. And it is a computing device.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's true. Especially it does have a web internet. And all. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, here's some more about the film industry and stuff like that. Doing a little shift. Usually we do stuff where we're talking about the RIAA going after people. Not so much anymore. Well, they are, but they're also expanded what they're doing. A film industry group that oversees copy protection technology of movie DVDs filed a patent infringement lawsuit Friday, which is back in Friday, February 13th, against 321 Studios Incorporated, the maker of popular DVD copying programs. The suit filed in the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York is the latest salvo by the DVD Copy Control Association in its larger fight against what the movie industry considers unauthorized usage of its content. The move also reflects the organization's strategic shift to go after businesses instead of individuals. Last month, the group dropped its trade secret case against San Francisco programmer Andrew Bunner and hundreds of others who helped post on the internet copies of the code that cracks the movie copy protection technology known as the Content Scramble System. In taking this legal action in this League of Action, DVD CCA is turning its focus towards those who produce and broadly distribute products in the marketplace that facilitate the widespread infringement of the copyrights of motion pictures that CSS was designed to protect, said Stephen Rice, for the attorney, an attorney for the association. So, they are now going after lots of other people as well. Yep, my CD is given out. It's, I think it's a little dirty, but that's all right. Show must go on.
So they're going to start going after, like, you know, any company that has anything to do with copying anything?
That
could have be copying a format of...
Well, like DVD copying, like, of course they have to decrypt the DVD, you know, and then... Well, you don't even have to decrypt the DVD to copy it. I actually don't know the total scope of what they're going after, but it seems like anybody that really aids in the copying of DVDs by whatever means, and there are people that obviously can be distributing, you know, other than just individuals, I'm sure there's could be organizations that do it, or, you know, a group.
Yeah.
And they're going after those guys as well.
Yeah. Wow. So they're pretty much just going to go after complete world domination.
Yes. Well, no, I mean, trying to... I mean, there is a fight on two fronts. There is the fight to take your data or whatever, because everything now is binary, it seems like, digital. Take your digital content and do with it what you please. And sometimes, you know, we get a little excited about copying things or trading things. And, you know, when you get prosecuted, I guess the typical feeling is like, wow, that guy's still driving a Ferrari and I just got to watch his flick without paying for it. Jeez. Like, now I'm going to get possible jail time and a large fine. Or the guys on the other side that are like, well, we're making lots of money doing this and... We could be potentially losing money here. I don't think they really are. Because, you know, they're basically paying to get something more than once. You know, because you hear it in a friend's car.
Yeah.
You know, but instead he lets you have it, maybe listen to it a few times.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But they want to charge you full price, full everything, you know, or you have it in on a CD, which went in your MP3 player.
Yeah.
Well, you can if you transferred it, but... You know what I mean? There's a lot of details involved, and obviously we're not going to be able to break them all out in this show here. But
we're a culture of liberty that we like, you know,
to liberate.
We like to have some room to breathe and some, you know, to stretch a little. And sometimes all this restriction doesn't seem to be conducive to our liberal natures.
Yes. So yeah, that would be me working with the C player, but that's all right. Okay. Well. Yeah, so, you know, there is just there's a general feeling of a war on both sides, and obviously they're going to have to try to do what they can on their side to protect their content, and I think that obviously you'd want to be in control of your train instead of driving something that's out of control, right?
Right.
So I guess they're doing that. But for the most part, I think from all this stuff, and we're kind of going back to another conversation we had previously in the show, there is a lot of solutions out there. A lot of people are happy and they are paying for things. And
yeah, but it, you know, it's just kind of disappointing because here's this completely new realm, a new arena of how to do things and how things are going on, and we're trying to deal with it from, you know, like a real or a traditional or the old world perspective. So, you know, like the internet is this whole new. It can be whatever we want it to be, but yet we bring so much of the outside world into it.
Yeah, and it's definitely an evolution process.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's obviously brought more benefits than bad things. So.
Yeah. Well, it'll be definitely really interesting to see how this stuff, you know, kind of turns out in the next 20, 30 years.
Yeah, definitely.
It's kind of neat to, you know. It's an exciting time to live.
I honestly believe, and I think I've made this prediction before on a previous show, but I honestly believe that the future will be somewhat like the book Necromancer. And it's very much, you know, what we're doing today, stuff like that. But there's so much more integration of technologies and cyber technology. Cyber, right? Cyber. What does cyber mean? You know what I mean? Being in a cyber universe, cyber as far as something existing on another plane. Well, there's a lot of that going on in that book. There is obviously, when you get into the internet, you're actually jacked in, is what it's called, and you're on a different plane. You're actually on the plane of, you know, electrons and neurons, and it's the integration of biology with technology. And
so it's kind of like where some of the Matrix stuff came about, probably came from.
Yeah, and you can see some of the vanity of society, like breast implants and all these augmentations and changing, well, cyber augmentations and all these different things. And who runs the world in that book? Corporations. Governments are there to just make laws that are actually abiding on a granular scale. It's ran by companies, big companies. There's lots of spying going on. There's lots of information trading going on. There's lots of stealing going on. Everybody in their own company has their own kind of like cyber warrior, people that they hire to come in and spy on other companies and stuff like that, and living in that existence. And there was a really interesting twist in the book because, if you haven't read it, tune out now and come back in about 30 seconds. But what it does is an interesting twist in the book that he finds out that the jobs that he's doing, this guy, the shadow runner, basically, what he's doing is from, he finds out later, it's actually from a computer. It was actually from a computer. And he finds out later, well, maybe it's going to be about a minute, he finds out later that that computer is connected to another computer. Well, they're not connected. They're actually disconnected. They're not connected for a specific reason. It's Neuromancer and Wintermute. And they're not connected for a specific reason because they both do separate controls. And that's
the give and take of society.
Yeah, and if they connect those two, then obviously those computers can really wreak havoc because they have both controls. One was like environmental, and the other one's like more business and stuff like that. And he all finds out the whole reason that this computer was having him do these jobs was to help get those two computers connected because... And this is from what I remember. I read it twice. It's been a while. They get them connected because what the reason was is that there was a glitch in the software saying that, like the SETI program, if I get a response from something from outer space, I need to contact this computer, which was actually, they needed to contact someone on the other network of the computer that was disconnected and let that computer know that I got a response from outer space. And this whole time, he was using him to use that as a directive to help complete that mission.
Wow, that's kind of...
I hope I'm quoting that right, but that's from what I remember. Okay, well, that's my prediction. Future, I think, is going to be like that. And the book was showing that there was a glitch, and that really, again, impacted the whole system. Something that small. So.
Well, created and, you know, ran the whole system.
Yeah. We've talked about RFIDs in the past, and it's getting to be a bigger thing, like walking around with some sort of tracking ID on you, right? That would be harder, right? To have to be built into our cell phone, have to be, you know, this, that. No, it can be very small and be quite intrusive if used improperly. Well, CrossID is an Israeli startup company founded by two engineers, formerly... at the telecommunications equipment provider RAD Group, has developed an innovative chipless RFID system that can protect sensitive documents such as intelligence agency reports, financial securities, and banknotes. The technology can also be used to create a hands-free barcode. The system uses nanometric materials, tiny particles of chemicals with varying degrees of magnetism that resonate when bombarded with electromagnetic waves from a reader. Each chemical emits its own distinct radio frequency, or note, that is picked up by the reader, and the notes emit a specific mix of different chemicals. Are then interpreted as a binary number. Since the system uses up to 70 different chemicals, each chemical is assigned its own position in a 70-digit binary number. For example, if the chemicals A, B, C, and D were assigned to the first, second, third, and fourth positions of the 70-digit number, then a mixture consisting of A, C would represent the binary number of 1010, followed by 66 zeros. Cross-ID is testing readers that operate at 3 to 10 gigahertz, which is higher than the frequencies commonly used by wireless LANs and handheld computers. Although the company has not made a final determination of what the frequency the readers will be use, the tiny chemical particles can be embedded in or printed on paper. Readers can be placed inside copying machines to prevent unauthorized copying. One application would be to require that any document printed on CrossID special paper be photocopied onto the same type of paper. That way, an intelligence agency, financial institution, or even a company wanting to protect the intellectual property could install readers at buildings' exits to prevent unauthorized people from copying documents and leaving the building with them. Previously, there has been no way to protect paper documents. We have created the first firewall for paper documents.
Yeah, that's kind of a scary thing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's a really big loophole. Is photography.
Yeah.
Just, click. And that's, been an old big spy technique since 007.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's...
Just use my cell phone.
Yeah, there you go. And so, really, that doesn't protect anything. It gives you a facade of protection or security.
Well, there's... But
really...
It gives you another level. If the guy's not using his camera breaks.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so in the 1% of, 0.1% of chance that could happen if somebody's spying on you.
Well...
But at the same time, that this new technology creates a huge arena for invasive tracking.
Very much so.
So it's cost-benefit analysis here of protection of down, at the... 0.1% that it could protect to the 6 billion that it could exploit.
See all these things that we're telling here? Okay, this is just a survival technique, right? So you heard this, right? So what are you going to do? You're going to remember to keep your hands on a good old copier machine that doesn't use this chemical sensing technology, right?
You're right.
Or you're going to know of a camera that's going to give you a good enough resolution.
Really easy.
Or you're going to learn how to do that. And see all this stuff.
Or a handheld scanner.
This is the biggest popular thing, I think, for people that are savvy to what's going on. In this day and age, all this information, all this reading, all this crap, all of this is to keep abreast of what's going on for survival techniques.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're just going to be a sheep of society.
Yeah. And, you're just following the Judah sheep.
Yeah. Now,
the slaughter.
Now, I have credit cards. I use those. I purchase stuff over the internet. So I've done a few things. You know what I mean? There's some things. It depends on your personality, how extreme you want to be, how lax you want to be. But you need the information to make that decision to begin with. So that's...
What level? Because you can't completely, want to be a Ted Kaczynski living out in the forest eating what you kill raw.
Yeah, but I mean, you could if you really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't bash anybody for doing it.
And you know what? If you are like that and you want to send me an invitation, I'll spend some time with you if you'd like. But at the same time, you can't be completely wide open on everything because you will be exploited.
Yeah.
So it's just at what level are you comfortable at?
Basically, what are you afraid of?
All right.
And that's it. Okay. Moving right along here. All right. Well, I guess, and this is just a little bit of information here, and I don't really know why it came about, but it seems like NASA has formulated their own open source agreement.
Ooh.
Yeah, so how they can release their own code or whatever it is that they want to release. Let's see. Brian A. Jertz, patent attorney for NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center, has submitted a first draft of their NASA open source agreement to the Open Source Initiative for approval. More interesting is the fact that they are looking for such an approval. The obvious question is, what will be released to the community and other space agencies once the license is approved to meet the open source definition? This is what I don't really understand. And it's a good question in the article. Brian states in the submission that none of these agreements suffice on its own or combined together for purposes of NASA for the following reasons. I'll just read a few of them here. NASA legal counsel requires that all NASA releases of software, including the indemnification of the U.S. government from any third-party liability arising from use or distribution of the software. Federal statute mandates that the U.S. government can only be held subject to United States federal law. NASA policies require only an effort to accurately track usage of released software for documentation and benefits realized. A few other things here. So
yeah, those don't sound like very open source things.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like, you know, you can look at it, send us an email, we might say something.
But it would be really neat to, like, have, you know, like, the operating system from, you know, like, Opportunity on your desktop so you can, like, play with it a little bit.
Yeah. Throw trajectories at it and see what it spits out.
That could be really fun. That would fascinate me for quite a while.
So that's the news. It's not... they haven't said anything beyond that. So, okay, well, IBM to launch Microsoft Office for Linux. No, they're not packaging their own Microsoft Office version or whatever. Basically, this is an article saying that, and a lot of these articles are informative, they're kind of expressing an idea. It's not a complete system. It's not a complete idea. It's not a product. It's not something that has happened. It's something that may happen. And what this is about is that they said that, it's a quote from IBM. The Office package is very good. If there's anything from Microsoft that shines, that's it. Frankly, we choose to port all of our solutions to Office. Okay, so what they're saying is that for the Linux desktop, right, that's the big push. And to make things more interesting for the Linux desktop, they're thinking that, well, for the meantime, let's see. So we can continue its popularity, and let's see if we can stick Microsoft Office on it. You know, there is a group out there called Codeweavers, which I purchased their product, which basically is a tweaked version of Wine and allows you to emulate Windows so you can install Office. It works. It crashes, but it works. And they're looking at a few different ways on how they could do it. So that's what IBM's trying to do. If you talk to Richard Stallman, he's not going to like that. And I don't know if I really enjoy that either. And the reason I mention that is because Richard Stallman, and like myself, I agree with the fact that if you're going to make an open source operating system, it should be entirely open source with everything it includes, the types of programs it runs on top of it, what the community is really supporting because...
But see, then you're being a completely exclusive open source, you know, monger, that if there happens, you know, it would be a neat integration between open source if there were, you know, if you were able to use, you know, like you pull in Microsoft, whatever you wanted to, or anybody else for that matter. If you wanted to buy the product, it would only benefit open source to have platforms for it to work on.
Well, like
or
I said.
Or a translator.
Well, like I said, I purchased the software.
Yeah.
So I do run Microsoft Office on Linux. So, or GNU Linux. But what I'm saying is that, obviously, you know, some people refuse to totally run that software. And that's their, you know, their choice. But what I'm saying is that, in the best interest, though, we want to focus more interest on the Linux community and GNU Linux community to going towards an open source operating system that uses all open source components, right? You want to put the more the focus there. And that's the point that I'm trying to make. But yeah, obviously, you know, because there's things in x86 that aren't completely open source, and, you know, that's not cool, but it's also done a lot of stuff for the desktop for Linux. So if, and there are people out there developing it, an alternative to X, an alternative to Office, which is OpenOffice, and just improving that, and forcing more open standards, and obviously the continual movement in that direction, that's where you really want to focus. But yeah, obviously, you know, there it's good, though, if we can transition people over.
Yeah,
and
I see
they'll be more freer than they were before.
Yeah.
You know, they're just running out. So that is a good thing. Okay. All right. Now, this is a pretty interesting... This is an older article back when they didn't know for sure it was leaked, but it has been leaked for sure. Let's see. This was an update to a previous article where they were saying that it was possible that Microsoft source code for Windows NT and 2000, which majority of it was for 2000, was actually leaked on the internet. And it says Microsoft confirms it's investigating distribution of Windows NT and 2000 source code online. This happened earlier this month, and it has therefore been confirmed. And in this article, it actually confirms a lot of stuff as well. However, only part of the source code appears to be leaked. They only say, those who say they have downloaded the code claim that is a 200 megabyte compressed file that expands into roughly 600 megabytes of code, says Thor Lornholm, a senior security researcher at Pix Solutions. And then Microsoft says that is a lot less than the 6 gigabyte to 10 gigabyte of source code Microsoft claims the OS consists of. If this is a leak, it's only part of the code, not all of the code. Another quote in the article says, I would consider it fairly unlikely that the Windows 2000 and Windows NT source code has leaked. Fairly unlikely that the... Wow. However, if any source from either operating system were to leak... from either operating system were to leak on the internet, it would be devastating to Microsoft. Wow. Who said it was fairly unlikely? Wilcox. Who is that here in the article? Wow, well, that's interesting that it actually, this person here did not really believe that it was leaked. Now, from my feelings here is that obviously the source code is used by quite a bit of people over at Microsoft, and I don't think they have complete access to all of it. But they do get access to portions of it. People are working from home. There's VPNs. I'm sure there is a lot of security put onto that source code. But along with lots of things with Microsoft, I'm sure that there's a way to get it out. And I happen to know for sure. Why? Because I've talked to people that have actually downloaded it. It is a 200 meg zip, and it expands to about 600 megs. And there is a folder structure in there, and it's not very easy for someone to read if you don't really work for Microsoft, but there is an index that explains where the entire list of what all the software is, or I mean the entire list of folder and file structure, but yeah, it's out there on the internet, and who knows, you know, it could be definitely devastating to Microsoft depending on which portions of it were released, and there are portions, I do believe, that were in there that were related to RPC, things with security, a few things in there that people are going to analyze. And I put a forums note on slipnet.org if you want to check it out. It's under the hacking forum, and I posed the idea, well, it was a little bit of a thought process, where I was like, you know, people are always saying, why doesn't Microsoft open source their code? Because obviously all the benefits we've talked about of open source. Well, in a weird abstract way, this is open sourcing part of their code. And but I did mention in there two sides of it. You know, one side is people are going to make vulnerabilities based off this code, and it's going to really make a lot of system administrators pissed off that they have to spend all this time, again, patching more and more Microsoft vulnerabilities. And obviously for people that are out there trying to keep their... you know, machine secure and stuff like that. Okay, you know, that's not too happy, but at least it's exposed and it's taken care of, then, you know, and that's another reason you might want to switch to something else if you're sick and tired of doing that, another operating system. You know, another good thing is that some of those things, if they get discovered ahead of time, maybe if Microsoft actually, and I'm sure they do this actually, give and placed where people can submit to them vulnerabilities that they have found so that they can correct them before people use it maliciously. So all the white hat hackers out there, take a look at the code if you can.
And maybe create some patches and send them to Microsoft.
Yeah, but don't tell them you looked at the code because they might try to get you. So that's always a two-way story there too. So it was a lot of thoughts to to that. I mean, you don't
so
want
you have to send it to them anonymously in some way, somehow.
Yeah. Or, you know...
Or you put a disc in an envelope and you ship it to them.
Yeah, with your fingerprints all over it. No. but no, so what I'm saying is that, you know, there's a lot of things that it's good, it's annoying, it's, you know, should you, you know, you one thing for sure is you don't, if you do download it, you don't want to be telling anybody, obviously. Yeah, so that's my take on it. And yeah, go to the Slipknot forums and post there any responses. Okay, well, we're getting towards the end of the show here. And let's see. No, that's. All right. Now, this is kind of a weird article. I read this, and I don't really know what they were talking about. Well, here we go. Okay. Microsoft warned customers Tuesday, which was back on February 10th, about unusual serious security problems with its Windows software that would let hackers quietly break into the computers to steal files, delete data, or eavesdrop on sensitive information. Microsoft has learned about the flaws from more than 6 months ago from researchers, said that only protective solution was to apply a repairing patch that offered on its website. It assessed the threat to computer users as critical, its highest rating. The Microsoft security executive, Stephen Tallis, said the flaw software was an extremely deep and pervasive technology in Windows and urged customers to apply the patch immediately. The disclosure comes from weeks before Microsoft Chairman Bill Gates delivers a keynote speech in San Francisco as one of the industry's most important security trade conferences. Microsoft has struggled in recent months against a tide of renewed criticism about security risk in its software and the engine for computers in most of the world's governments, corporations, and homes. This is one of the most serious Microsoft vulnerabilities ever released, and said Mark Meffert of EI Digital Security Incorporated, who discovered the new Windows flaw. The breadth of the systems affected is probably the largest ever. This is something that will let you get into internet servers, internal networks, pretty much any system.
Wow.
And says right here, says the race will be on, agreed Mark Assach of a former White House advisor on cybersecurity. Researchers at II discovered the problem last July and agreed to keep quiet about it until Microsoft could fix them. Meffert explained that the delay between II's discovery and Tuesday's public disclosure by Microsoft was totally unacceptable because Windows users were broadly vulnerable during the period.
Well, they were broadly vulnerable before that as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because there was just a discovery of this vulnerability.
Let's see. You know, I'm looking here for the patch, and I'm not seeing anything, where it is and what it's called.
Right, except it's on their website.
Microsoft urged customers to apply the patch immediately if they're using Windows NT 2000 and XP, or it's Windows NT Server 2000 or 2003 Server, software commonly found in corporations. Now, I looked all through this article, and I did not see an ounce of the actual description of what it was and what the patch is that you need. So, very bad article that information was not included. Okay, and to wrap up our show, I just wanted to kind of laugh at this page here that says, the five reasons to choose Unix instead of Linux. It's on SCO's website. And these will be the five reasons to choose it over Linux.
All right, let's hear.
Okay, number one. I wonder if this is order of importance. SCO Unix is a proven, stable, and reliable platform.
Really?
Yeah, I thought Linux was had some stability to it, right?
Yeah.
Thought it was something there.
And who proved it? What? Was there an independent study done?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there's always independent studies done. That French fries will not make you fat. and hamburgers are good for you. Okay, so number two, SCO Unix is backed by a single experienced vendor. They've got their own vendor. Wow. And they're experienced.
So is Microsoft.
Yeah. And there's some Linux vendors been around for a few years.
Yeah.
Well, SCO Unix has a committed, well-defined roadmap.
A roadmap to what country?
Yeah, I don't... I don't even know what they do over there, actually.
Yeah.
I know what Microsoft and Linux is doing or trying to do. And, it, you know, I know for sure Linux is sticking to... Yeah, it's... Okay, well, it's not a good point. Sco Unix is secure.
Really?
So is my oven.
Yeah.
Not. So, I mean, you know, everyone says they're secure. There's vulnerabilities in Linux, Mac, Windows...
Yeah.
I don't think Sco is having less vulnerabilities than Linux. Sco is legally unencumbered.
Whoa.
Yeah, they're legally unencumbered. But they have lots of legal issues going on right now.
Yeah, they've got suits up the wazoo. And
yeah, they're unencumbered. So
well, because all their legal issues are advantageous for them.
Yeah.
And... not and a disadvantage to you.
Unless,
or any
unless they lose, and then they're going to tank. They're going to be deleted off the face of the map. Okay, that's it, folks. That was the five reasons why you should switch from Linux to Unix, or you know, stick with Unix. So or Sco Unix to
wow.
be more specific. So
yeah,
are you convinced? I mean, look at these reasons. I mean, there was nothing here that said anything amazing.
Or even anything even somewhat substantiated.
Yeah, like their roadmap. I can understand you want to know where a company's going, but where are they at now? Okay. They didn't say anything about that. They have a good vendor. Does that mean they get CDs to your door on time? They're secure. It's debatable. Legally
yeah, if you don't open up the package.
Yeah. Yeah. The package actually is probably insecure. Proven stable and reliable platform. Okay. All right. Well, I'm not convinced. And that's our show. Anything else to add?
No, really.
Okay. All right. Well, once again, go to the Slipknot forum, slipknot.org, and head to the forums and post away. We actually got a few new people signed up. We've got, last I looked, 36 users. We just got to get conversations going, and...
yeah, if anybody's curious, you know, just post something of what kind of vision you would like to have. Doesn't matter what... Do you want to see, like, gamma rays, X-rays, infrared, anything unusual that you would like your eyes to be able to detect?
Obviously, you don't need to post about seeing through people's clothes, okay? That's
yeah.
kind of a given.
Yeah.
But
you can if you really want to, but...
Yeah, we won't limit any posts. That's right, yeah. Post whatever you want. So there's that.
I would really like to, you know, pick up some dialogues about different kinds of vision.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, people will be posting more often if we feel that others are going to post there as well. So I post there, and we'll get some... I just don't want to be the only one posting there. So okay, well, and if you have any emails that you want to send us, go ahead and shoot an email off to slipmode@quest.net. Please don't sign me up for gay porn. And put in the subject header in the now. And, yeah. And we'll take that email, read it on the air, get back to you. Whatever happens. Okay, well, this is the February 22nd show of the In-N-Out Show. And this is your host, Slip Mode, signing off, along with my esteemed guest,
VR,
and sidekick. We will see everyone in... 2 weeks.